said Maggie.
Yes, tomorrow. I'll need to speak with Jamie afterward.
I'm sure she'll be more amenable, said Maggie. Vega was not at all sure of this. I will speak with you soon, Miss Vega. Thank you for coming.
They shook hands again, and Maggie got into her car and drove off. Vega looked down the road at the unmarked car. She wasn't sure, but thought she could see the shadow of a man at the wheel. The man didn't move and didn't seem bothered by her seeing him. Vega stood up straight and stared at him for another minute. She wasn't bothered either. Later, in a room at the inn, Vega emptied her head in an email to the bastard. To omgbastard@thebastard.com, from Alice Vega, re-info. I'm near Philadelphia working a case. Could you look up the following for me? Whereabouts of Kevin Michael Brandt, date of birth 12/19/81, social security number 19975-8225. Start with Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, West Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, then expand to all U.S. Any other relevant information? Ridgewood Mall on Sterling Road East. Can you get me security camera feed from around the Kmart from last Saturday until 1 p.m.? Also, all parking lot exits / entrances. Hess Gas on Township Highway 148. Security camera feed from last Saturday morning. Staff and faculty at Starfield Middle School and Denville East Elementary. Look for anything that stands out. ASAP. She looked up the police blotter from the past 2 months on the Denville Daily Tribune website. Domestic violence, shoplifting, and minor drug busts, all for oxycodone, Vicodin, Percocet, heroin. And more oxy, and more heroin. She went back a year or two, looking for times when the Denville Police Department had made the news. In 2013, budget cuts required reduction of the department by 5 officers. In 2014, a scandal. A former high school football star overdosed on oxy in the holding cell where he was awaiting processing. Vega scanned the photos. She paused on the detective who had resigned to avoid further attention from the Schuylkill County District Attorney. The photo was from a better day, the detective smiling and standing with another man, shutting one eye into the sun, both of them holding thin silver fish on lines. She felt like she recognized him, his smile and curly brown hair. But maybe he had one of those faces. She checked the time in the corner of her screen. 2:42 a.m. She was not the least bit tired. Downtown Denville was made up entirely of shabby storefronts on narrow streets, and neighborhoods with weighty American names from a more industrious time, evoking coal mines and lumber yards. Bull Rush, Rockland, Black Creek. Vega didn't see one black or Hispanic or Asian person. Everyone was white and smoked cigarettes and drove cars with dents. At an intersection, there was a man in a hospital gown and flip-flops, hitchhiking. His face was unshaven, gaunt, calm. Vega drove closely past him, but did not stop. The police department was an unadorned 3-story beige building on a corner. Vega parked her rental on the street and saw 3 or 4 news vans in the parking lot. She recognized Channel 12 from the night before at Gail and Arlen White's house. Inside, the station smelled like every other one she'd ever been in, half government facility and half men's locker room, astringent, with the smell of old shoes and sweat. The lobby was full of people, sitting in the folding chairs against the walls, standing, talking to each other or on phones. Behind the reception counter were 2 women, one fat, one thin. The fat one wore a cop's uniform and was explaining a form on a clipboard to a man who kept saying, "Do I need a lawyer? Should I call a lawyer?" The thin one was not a cop, wore wide-rimmed glasses and an oversized sweater. Vega stood in line for 40 minutes and listened as the women behind the counter gave out forms and phone numbers, telling everyone they had to talk to someone else or wait or come back later. Vega eventually stepped up to the front of the line and faced the thin woman with the glasses.
"Can I help you?" she said to Vega.
"I'd like to speak to Captain Hollows." The thin woman wasn't happy to hear this.
What's your name? She said.
Alice Vega.
What's that?
Alice Vega. V-E-G-A. Vega watched the woman write on a pad, Alice Vega.
Does he know what this is in regards to?
I have some information about the Brandt girls. Vega watched the woman's eyes go wide, but only a little. She picked up the phone and dialed three numbers. She cupped her hand around the receiver to create a little shield.
Alice Vega is here to see you? She has information about the Brandt girls? Yeah, okay.
She hung up and said,
Someone's going to come down for you.
Thanks. Vega waited. Clock on the wall said 9:17. A cop with a shaved head and heavy eyes came down the stairs. Plain clothes, white shirt and brown pants, comfortable shoes. A look of either apathy or exhaustion. Around 6 feet tall. Vega could have picked him out as a cop in a dark movie theater.
You here for the captain?
Yes. He turned around and started walking back the way he'd come, up the stairs.
You in town for long?
He said, still facing forward. A little while, said Vega.
How long, do you know?
It didn't exactly sound like he was accusing her of something, but that he might be starting soon. Not sure yet, she said.
Oh, yeah?
He said, a little dare. Vega guessed he wasn't crazy about the idea of her being in town at all. She was a quarter Mexican, with dark hair and light eyes, her skin fair but easily tanned. She looked more ethnic depending on the day. Maybe this was one of those days, and maybe he didn't like that. Or maybe he just didn't like strangers. They came to the second floor, full of cubicles and cops, plain clothes and uniforms, phones ringing, one man yelling over another to be heard, a snap of laughter.
It's a nice place, the cop said. You'll enjoy it more than you think.
Sure. They stopped in front of a glass door, and the cop opened it and showed Vega in. The man behind the desk was on the phone. He said,
I'll call you back,
and hung up.
Hi, Miss Vega, right?
He said, coming toward her.
Greg Hollows. Everyone calls me Junior.
He shook her hand, then pointed at the cop who had brought her.
You've met Detective Rawls?
Sure. Rawls left without a sound.
Please have a seat.
Vega sat in a chair opposite the desk. She glanced up at the ceiling, peeling paint in the corners. The radiator under the one window made crackling noises. Hollows did not sit. He leaned backward against his desk so he was standing over her. He had a boyish face, big blue eyes and hair a little long in the front that she suspected he would have to constantly push back from his forehead, boyishly. He smiled at her.
When you get into town?
He asked like he was an old friend, someone she had run into at a high school reunion, making chit-chat over a beer. Last night.
What do you think of Denville?
It's fine.
It's a nice place to live.
That's what I hear.
Planning on staying long?
A few days.
That's all it'll take, huh?
That's all what will take. Hollows scratched his chin and then laughed gently. He leaned down so his face was close to her ear.
I know who you are, Miss Vega, and I know why you're here.
Then he went back behind his desk, sat down.
I had a chat with Maggie Chambly this morning. She's a nice lady.
Vega said nothing.
I know she hired you to find the Brandt girls.
They stared at each other. They waited. He rubbed his eyes and said,
I'm glad you came to see me, because I would have come to see you this afternoon. I have every man in my shop working the Brandt case around the clock. They are capable, professional, and determined, and they will find these girls. We have no need for a private detective here.
He paused.
I realize you have special skills.
He turned to his computer and tapped a key, then swiveled the screen toward Vega. She saw an old photo alongside an article. It was her and Sheriff Coulson with Ethan Moreno and his parents.
You're pretty famous out in California, huh?
Hollows glanced at the article.
Big hero, the bounty hunter who found Ethan Moreno.
Vega looked back at him and stopped smiling.
You're still not a cop. You're a girl with a gun who's watched too much Buffy. So I'm asking as nicely as I can here, with all respect to you, that you tell Maggie Shambly you quit and that you stay out of the way. We don't need civilian assistance in this matter, Miss Vega.
She let that sit for a moment. She waited until Hollows opened his mouth to say something else, and then she spoke instead. You have 29 police here, not counting yourself and your chief, right? Hollows was surprised, but recovered quickly.
I know that doesn't sound like a lot. I figure you're probably the only captain in a town this size. Maybe 2 lieutenants, 2 sergeants, on management and strategy, right? You seem to have had a bit of an oxy-heroin problem here for the last 5 years or so, so you probably have at least 2 teams of detectives on narcotics, which leaves 1 team for homicides, 1 for sex crimes, 1 for robberies and burglaries, which leaves 14 patrol cops who answer the rest of the calls, domestic violence, shoplifting, assault and battery, vandalism, and in their spare time they do traffic control. You've had your funds cut 3 years in a row, and you can afford only 1 additional secretary at reception, so it's very possible that you don't divvy up the jobs at all, and it's more of a first-come, first-served, or clusterfuck type of situation. Which, judging by the age of that machine you're typing on and the disrepair of this office in general, I tend to believe. Hollows paused briefly. Vega was not close enough to see if his eyes were dilated, but she bet they were. Thinking hard. He leaned back in his seat and threw up his hands gently into little finger fireworks. So, you know how to use the Internet. I guess that's supposed to impress me?
I'm sure you know how to use the Internet, too. I'm sure you know about David Haber, who lives 2 blocks from the Brants, convicted of statutory rape in 2004, and Robert Valinsky, who lives 1/2 mile from the girl's grandparents' house, pleaded no contest to trafficking and child pornography in 2012.
I couldn't confirm or deny either, as it would compromise the confidentiality of an ongoing investigation, said Hollows.
Sure, said Vega. Do you know the name Warren Pearson?
Should I?
He was arrested for assault 5 years ago in Philly. Bar fight, slammed his opponent's face into a pinball machine, spent 60 days in county. His bunkmate was a guy named Jay Nunez, who, in addition to being arrested for possession of crack and heroin, was awaiting trial for molestation of his 4-year-old stepson.
I have a feeling you're going to tell me how this relates to my case.
Last year, Pearson got a job with a company called Diego Tree Service and Maintenance, the landscapers for most of Schuylkill County's public schools, including Starfield Middle School and Denville East Elementary, where Kylie and Bailey Brant attend, respectively.
So you think Warren Pearson kidnapped the Brant girls to give them to a pervert he met in county? Said Hollows.
He moved his tongue to the front of his teeth, cleaning out the space. Not particularly. But you had never heard of those men before I just told you about them. I'm not looking to impress you. And, with all respect, I think you need all the civilian assistance you can get.
To chase dead ends?
To shake out every rug in this trash heap town until you find those girls. It has been almost 48 hours. You don't even have the time to be arguing with me right now. Hollows smiled and folded his hands together. This is the church. Here's the steeple. Vega knew she was losing and kept calm. Her eyes combed Hollows's desk. Stapler, letter opener, a cup filled with pens. No scissors that she could see. Not yet, she thought. Not just yet. No sense breaking down the front door if you can pick the lock in the back, Perry would say. She wrote the email to the bastard in her head. Captain Greg Jr. Hollows, give me everything you got. Mrs. Svetich sat across from Cap in his office and watched the images on his laptop. Cap glanced back and forth between her face and the screen. She was an attractive woman, maybe not as young as the woman her husband was sleeping with, but she had nice eyes and smooth skin, and long brown hair tied up in a knot on top of her head like some Italian actress. Cap tried to see it from Mr. Svetich's point of view. Gray hair at the roots, thin lips pressed together when she was upset, ruler thin body, but not from working out. Naturally bony, thin wrists and thick hands. She shook her head gently and said, "Okay, that's enough." Cap pressed stop and faced her. This was not an unfamiliar moment for him. When women thought their husbands were cheating, they were usually right, and he had had plenty of them as clients. He could typically tell how they were going to act, which were the sobbers and which were the plate throwers. Mrs. Svetich, though, could go either way. "So," she said, "what now?"
"Well," said Cap, "that's up to you."
"I know," she said, annoyed. "I was thinking out loud. I know you don't know what now. I was asking myself that."
"Of course."
She laughed a curt little laugh. "You know what, though, Mr. Kaplan?"
"What?"
"I think this would almost be easier if he was a nice guy, but he's not. He was when we got married a million years ago, but he's been a jerk for a long time. We had a fight 2 weeks ago, and he called me an asshole. Who talks to their wife like that?"
She seemed to wait for Cap to respond, so he said, "It's very disrespectful."
"Yes, it is. And now it's like, okay, I'm free. I get whatever I want because I have this tape. I get the kids. I win. Who cares?"
Pause, thought Cap. Let her breathe.
"You married?"
she asked.
"Divorced."
Mrs. Svetich nodded. "I'm sure you don't have anything to tell me that makes this moment easier."
There was, actually, a great deal Cap could tell her. What he really would like to say was, 2 years. "You'll be a basket case for 2 years. Then you'll start feeling like a normal person again. You'll start enjoying the taste of coffee and watching your kids' school play. But for 2 years, you will be a schizophrenic. Angry, guilty, sad." Instead, he shook his head.
"Yeah, I thought as much," said Mrs. Svetich. "Yes, so, your bill?"
she said, opening her purse.
"I can send you an invoice."
"No, thanks. Please don't take this the wrong way, but I'd like to pay now, so I can never think about you again."
Cap nodded and handed her the invoice. She pulled out a checkbook and a pen and scribbled the numbers and words, ripped the check out, and held it out for Cap to take, the paper shaking in her hand. Cap took it from her, and Mrs. Svetich stood up to leave, so Cap did too. He tried to think of something else he could say.
"Don't worry," said Mrs. Svetich. "There's nothing you can say."
She laughed again, but oh, her eyes. He could see drops hanging off the lower lids. One blink would make them roll. He walked with her to the door.
"Thanks, Mr. Kaplan,"
she said in a strange, high voice. She didn't blink and didn't look at him as she left. Cap shut the door, rolled his shoulders back, and made a sound like, "Ugh." He checked his watch. 12:15. Really too early for a beer. He sat back in his chair and scrolled through his emails. He clicked on one with the subject line "Inquiry" from an address he didn't recognize. "Mr. Kaplan, I am interested in retaining your services. Please write me back at this address and let me know your availability for a conversation. Thanks. A. Vega." New business is good, he thought. What had just happened with Mrs. Svetich was the hardest part of the job. Everything else, tracking down people who weren't candidates for Mensa to begin with, filling out paperwork for the retail outfits that hired him, making his own hours, leaving his old cig in a micro vault in the closet, not waking up with his jaw locked from tension. This was all the good part. So he wrote back,
"Hello. I'm available to speak now until 2:30 p.m. this afternoon, or otherwise after 7 p.m. tonight. Also, I am free tomorrow between 9 a.m. and noon. If those windows don't work for you, please let me know what times might. Thanks for your interest, Max Kaplan."
He hit send and leaned back, sipped his cold coffee and opened the folder for the skip. He flipped through the pages. The driver's license photo of Brandon Haas, last known street address. Trouble finding this one. Didn't want to pay child support for his 2-year-old twin boys, so he moved out of his apartment and ditched his cell.
only after he'd insisted on a paternity test because he told the mother of his children, "Can't be mine, they look colored." The mother had said to Cap that Brandon was full of shit because he knows she would never sleep with a black guy. Good, good people. And now he heard the doorbell from the front of the house and figured it was UPS. He found himself feeling relieved that he could step out of Brandon Haas's life for a moment as he went through the door that led to the rest of the house, through the hallway and living room and to the front door. He glanced through the window and saw a woman there, no one he recognized. He opened the door, and there she was. She was slender, but not small, big eyes taking up most of her round, doll-like face, little makeup, brown hair pulled back. Pretty in an unadorned way. "Max Kaplan?" she said.
"Yes?"
"I'm Alice Vega. You just sent me an email." Cap looked around.
"You got here pretty quickly."
"I was close by." Cap tried to read her. Clothes were a giveaway for the type. Mrs. Svetich's blouse with the boat neckline and khaki pants showed that she had dressed up, that she had maybe once held a job where she wore these clothes, even if she was a stay-at-home mom now. The mother of Brandon Haas's children, Haley, wore stained jeans and an extra-small T-shirt. Then there was the face and body. Eyes, lips, hands. That will tell you the state of mind. Mrs. Svetich was all tight neck muscles and pleading eyes. Desperate, sad, tense. Haley Haas twitched and ran her words together and screwed her lips up into crazy angles. Angry, unpredictable, drunk. Alice Vega wore black. All black. Black pants, black blouse, black boots, black canvas jacket. Her face had no discernible expression, but there was emotion there. Cap just couldn't make it out. "Is this still a good time for you?" she said.
"Yeah, it is. Let's go around to my office."
She nodded and smiled politely. Cap turned the lock on the doorknob and closed the front door, walked across the parched lawn to the driveway.
"You from around here?" he said over his shoulder.
"No," she answered, and that was all.
Okay, Cap thought. Not a talker.
They walked up the concrete path alongside the house, Vega still behind him a step. Cap opened the door to his office and held it open.
"Where are you in from?" he said.
She stepped inside. He watched her eyes cover the room like headlights, and he suddenly felt embarrassed about the space. The IKEA furniture seemed old and shabby. The stained wood floor did not seem part of the house's old-school charm. It just looked cheap. "California," she said.
"Wow, long way," he said.
"Would you like coffee?" he asked, pointing to the crops in the corner. "No, thanks."
"Please sit."
She sat on the edge of the chair, like she was ready to leave suddenly. Cap sat behind his desk and realized how messy it was, covered in folders.
"What can I do for you, Ms. Vega?" he said.
"I've been hired by the Brandt family. I understand you used to be a detective with the Denville police. I need your help." Cap's professional smile disappeared.
"Are you a PI?" he asked.
"I find missing persons." Cap nodded.
"I'm not sure how I can help you."
"I met with Greg Hollows this morning." Cap moved the Brandon Haas folder on his desk an inch to the left.
"And how is he?"
"Reluctant. He doesn't want my help. Says he doesn't need it."
"I doubt that."
"So do I," said Vega. "It's easier if I do this with the police. I'm sure you understand."
"Yeah," said Cap. "Easier, cheaper, quicker. I'm still not sure how I fit in here. You know I'm no longer with the police."
"I do. Most information I can get. I have a guy who can get it for me. I don't need to know how to find the girl's father or get video feeds. I have the full cooperation of Jamie Brandt and her family as of now. But there's a piece I can't get to."
"Witness statements," said Cap.
"Yes. I could get employees from local businesses, but the people in the parking lot, passers-by, there's no way I could get them all." She paused. Cap watched her eyes travel quickly to the corner of the room as she thought. I could get them. It would just take time.
Which you don't have, said Cap.
Which I don't have, said Vega. Cap smiled and tried to look casual. He sipped his cold coffee casually, to show Vega how much he didn't care about the Brandt girls or the police department.
Okay, he said. You seem like a resourceful person who's done her homework. So you know all about me, right?
Some.
So you know that I ended my relationship with the Denville PD 2.5 years ago, and it was not exactly what you'd call an amicable breakup.
Cap waited for Vega to say something, her face again a blank sheet.
I don't have witness statements, Ms. Vega, said Cap. I don't have access to witness statements. I literally can't walk into the station or else I violate the terms of my agreement with them, okay? What I'm telling you is you have a broken arm and you need a paramedic, not a guy in an alley with a box of Band-Aids.
They were quiet. Vega cocked her head a small bit to the side and then reached for an inside pocket. Just for a second, Cap felt his legs tense up, the back of his head tingle. Old reflex. She pulled out a sheet of paper, folded into quarters, and unfolded it. She leaned forward on the tip of her chair and placed the paper on Cap's desk so he could read it. It was a printed copy of one of the articles from the Trib. Cap forced a laugh.
You know, I've made a great effort not to look at this stuff. I know you just met me, Ms. Vega, and I know you'd never guess this about me, but I don't have the greatest self-esteem to begin with, and this just makes me feel bad about myself.
Vega held her hand over the paper like it was a Ouija board. This says that you resigned less than 24 hours after this kid, Ron Samuels, died in police custody. Less than 24 hours. That makes me think you did it quick, to make it go away, to avoid criminal or civil litigation. It says you were on track to become sergeant. In less than 24 hours, you decided to crash the career you'd been building your whole life without a fight. There's only one reason anyone does that.
Why's that? Said Cap.
To protect someone. Probably a friend, colleague. Probably someone else was in the room when Ron Samuels died. Someone who made the wrong call. Didn't call an ambulance when he should have. Maybe there was negligence, maybe not. Sounds like the kid had a drug problem. But something happened in that room. If you were culpable, maybe you would have tried to negotiate at least to get some part of your pension, something. But you didn't, because you were protecting someone else. Vega was so calm when she spoke that Cap couldn't quite be angry. Hearing her recount the experience just made him tired.
Hey, what do you want? He said.
Witness statements. Cap held out his arms to show how empty they were. No witness statements here.
I don't have them. I don't know what to tell you.
Someone in the Denville police owes you a favor. I propose you call it in. I will give you half of whatever I make from this. Jamie Brandt's aunt has a lot of money, and I don't work cheap. If I work a month on this case, your half could be upwards of 25K.
Who the fuck are you? Cap thought. Where did you come from?
He tried not to imagine putting $25,000 into his anemic share of Nell's college fund, which would probably cover book costs, but it was a start.
What if I said I don't care about the money? He said.
I don't care, said Vega. I don't care about you and your personal needs and wants. I don't care that you feel bad about yourself or that you have or haven't come to terms with your former career. I don't care. I am looking for these two girls, just a little younger than your daughter, Mr. Kaplan, and you could help me do that. You have the capacity to do that, so why wouldn't you do that? Her eyes searched his face. He felt like he was in a dream state, like he would look down and suddenly realize he had the body of a horse.
"I don't do police work anymore, Ms. Vega," he said. "I don't associate with police. I have my own business, my own clients. I'm working on something right now," he said, tapping the Brandon Haas folder. "I'm sorry. I can't help you."
They stared at each other for what felt to Cap to be about 30 minutes. Then Vega nodded and finally took her eyes off him. She looked at the floor.
"Okay," she said quietly.
She finally sat back in the chair, and Cap relaxed his neck and exhaled. She looked up at him and smiled. It was not what he would call genuine, but it was respectful. It made him want to tell her more.
"I'm sorry," he said again. "I admit the things I work on are not as serious as this."
"Skips and cheaters?" she said.
"Skips and cheaters," he said.
"So if this one," she said, pointing to the Brandon Haas folder, "were out of your way, just disappeared, you would reconsider?" Cap laughed.
"I don't know. I'd love to say to you, no way, but I'm getting that you probably don't hear that a lot."
Cap's cell buzzed on his desk. The photo of a pug dog came up, the one that Nell had set as her profile picture.
"I'm sorry," he said, holding the phone.
"Will you excuse me?"
"Yes, please," said Vega.
Cap tapped accept and headed out of the office, through the door into the hallway of the house.
"Hey, what's wrong?"
"Dad, nothing's wrong. Don't panic," said Nell.
"Worst possible thing you could say to a parent. What's up?"
"Mom's car broke down at her work, and she was going to pick me up from practice, but now she's got a class this afternoon, and then she has to wait for the tow, so could you pick me up and take me to Carrie's?"
"Sure. What time?"
"Like 5:15-ish?
"Yeah, that's fine. How are you getting from Carrie's house to Mom's if Mom has no car?"
"Carrie's mom can take me." Then Nell whispered, "After we eat quinoa cakes and barley salad." Cap smiled. "Thanks, Dad."
"No problem, Bug. Hey, does your mom need... Is she okay?"
"She's not okay, Dad. She needs you to save her. And she says she's sorry about all the fights that you had at the end and that nasty voicemail she left you that time. And she's really grateful you never called her an asshole. And she wants you back and wants us to be a family like we were, 3 against the world. "She's fine. She has AAA. I gotta go. See you later. Thanks, Dad. I love you."
"Love you too," said Cap.
He hung up and went back into the office. Vega was sitting where he had left her, hands in her lap.
"I'm sorry about that. It was my daughter. And you know, if she calls instead of texts, I know something's up."
"Of course, it's no problem."
"Where were we?"
"You don't want the job," she said. She was not angry.
"Right," Cap said. "I've just got too much on my plate right now."
Vega nodded. They were quiet for a moment. Then she stood.
"Sorry to bother you."
"Not at all. Thank you for coming by. I hope everything works out."
Cap walked her to the door.
"Nice to meet you," he said,
extending his hand.
"You as well," she said, shaking it.
He opened the door for her, and she stepped out.
"Hey, Ms. Vega?"
She turned.
"How did you know I had a daughter? It wasn't in any of the articles about me. I went through a lot of trouble to keep it out."
Her eyebrows raised up just a little bit, in a tiny arch, charmed. "I saw her shoes when you opened the front door. Female athletic shoes." Now Cap smiled, both of them caught in the joke.
"I see," he said. "So how'd you pin her age?"
"You have a copy of Othello on the dashboard of the car in your driveway."
"How do you know it's not mine?" he said. "Maybe I live for Shakespeare."
"Just a hunch," she said, shrugging, looking down. Was she looking down shyly? Was this flirting? Cap couldn't tell. He hadn't been on a date in so long he'd forgotten what it felt like. "Thanks for your time," said Vega, and then she left.
Cap watched her go. Fairly certain he saw the lines of a holster crossing her back under her jacket. Chapter 3 In the car, Vega scrolled on her phone to the photos she had taken of Kaplan's file while he'd been on the phone in the other room. She stared at the photo of Brandon Haas, looked over his stats, and tapped out another email to the bastard on the screen. Later, in a room at the inn, she was studying footage from the Kmart parking lot when the message from the bastard came in. Got a Brandon Haas with same birthday as your Haas from ADP paycheck dated 3/15. Luke Construction out of Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Also leases, driver license, but all old. Also Junior Hollows is boring as shit, but his wife has two Facebook pages, and you'll get a kick out of one of them. Vega sniffed in approval at the bastard's ingenuity and stopped reading, closed up her email, and went online to find a number for Luke Construction. Vega was on her way out the front door, patchouli and lemon still in her nose from the sitting room, a slip of paper in her hand with an address on it. "Miss Vega?" She turned. It was Elaine, the owner of the inn. She was a slender woman in her 70s with long hair. She wore a lot of scarves and beads and was holding a basket of fruit. "Hi," said Vega. "This is for you," Elaine said, presenting the fruit. Vega stared at it. "It's your welcome basket," Elaine added. "Usually I have it waiting in folks' rooms, but this all happened so quickly I didn't have a chance." "Thanks," muttered Vega. "It's really not necessary." Now Elaine gave her a bit of the side eye, wagging a teasing finger. "Now you strike me as the kind of person who doesn't eat unless she's reminded, right?" Vega made herself smile. She felt about 10 years old. "So you take it with you. These are all organic. I'd like to tell you they're local, but this isn't the best time of year for fruit around here." Vega took the fruit. It was unexpectedly weighty. "I'll get the door for you," said Elaine. "Thanks." Elaine opened the passenger side door, and Vega dropped the fruit basket on the seat. "Cheese and wine at 6, if you like," said Elaine. Vega continued to smile, and then Elaine was off, down the front path, her skirt swishing around her. Vega got into the car, started the engine, and plugged the address from the slip of paper into the GPS. "Head northwest on Market Street," it said. She checked her mirror and made herself smile again, just to see what it looked like. Vega parked on the vacant west side of the lot of Newtown Mall, where a real food market was being built. It didn't look like much of anything yet, a crevasse where whatever had been there before had been recently gutted, and dumpsters of debris. She sat in the car for a few minutes and watched construction workers walking around, talking in groups. There were only about 10 of them. She figured most had quit for the day. It was just after 5. She glanced around at the other stores. She got out and went to a Home Depot, up and down the aisles to tools and hardware. At the register, a man with a ponytail and yellow teeth said, "You find everything okay today?" Vega watched the items show up on the digital screen. Straight link chain, 5 feet. Easy bungee cord, 2 count. Iron tough pipe wrench. She said, "Yeah, thanks. Do you know where I can get a hot tea?" Vega walked from her car to the construction site, about 40 feet. The tea spilled over the sides of the open cup, ripping hot streams down her fingers. 2 groups of men, 1 of 3, 1 of 5. She went up to the 3-man group. "Hey, baby," said the one on the left. "You bring me coffee?" She said to the one in the middle, about 5'10", crew cut and forehead hanging over his eyes like an awning, "Brandon Haas?" "Yeah," he said, amused, excited. The others shouted and laughed. Vega started by throwing the hot tea at his crotch. He screamed and crumpled to the ground. The comedian on the left went for her, and she cracked him across the nose with the pipe wrench. The one on the right came half a second later, and she punched him,
an uppercut to the jaw with the chain wrapped around her fist. All three down. Then came the other five. Vega squatted and pulled her jacket back so they could see the gun. "Just don't," she said. She wound the chain around Hoss's neck and cinched it like a leash. He coughed and choked. The two on the ground stirred and moaned.
"Fuck you, bitch," said one of the five, coming at her.
"I'm telling you, don't," she said, her right hand on the gun, her left pulling the chain choking Hoss at her feet. "You want to die for a guy you met a couple of months ago?" He stayed where he was. She started to pull Hoss across the lot. At first he coughed and sputtered, pried his fingers underneath the chain to distance it from his neck, his legs twisted up over his crotch. "Kick your legs," she said. Hoss grunted and tried to ball up. Vega yanked the chain and leaned her head over him. "Kick your legs. I can't pull you on your ass the whole way." He kicked, crab-walking, still trying to pull at the chain. Vega saw it was starting to tear the skin on his neck. She didn't stop moving until she got to her car, and then she dropped him on the pavement. Hoss coughed and fell flat on his back, squirming. Vega examined her keychain to find the little icon of the open trunk and pressed it. Hoss lifted his head and tried to speak. Vega straddled him. "Don't say anything," she said. She wrapped a bungee cord quickly around his wrists and tried to pull him up. "Stand. Stand now," she said. His limbs were gummy, and he kept folding down to his knees. Shock, she thought. Vega hoisted him up under the arms and pushed him into the trunk, then lifted his legs in. He started to breathe deeply, the color coming back into his face from being choked.
"Who are you? Who the fuck are you?" he said.
She thought of what Perry would say, what he always said when some deadbeat skip asked him who he was, but she was too preoccupied to deliver the line, to really give it the nice spin Perry used to. She slammed the trunk closed. She got in the driver's seat and heard him screaming.
"Fucking bitch! I'ma fucking kill you! Let me out!"
She looked at the fruit basket on the seat next to her. Alice Vega had left Cap in a strange mood. He'd written another email to Brandon Hoss's brother and talked to his former landlady, who said he'd left no forwarding address, but that he'd left the bathroom filthy. Cap had quit soon afterward and found himself reading up on the Brandt girls. Disappeared from a car in a parking lot. Police were talking with witnesses who thought they may have seen the girls get into a car across the street from the mall, but the articles had no further detail. He watched a few clips from the news. They were all variations on the same story. Even the on-location anchor people looked the same in bland suits and product-sculpted hair. The mother had given a statement. She looked familiar to Cap, even though he was sure they'd never met. She looked like folks around Denville, especially Black Creek. Not a terrible neighborhood, but one where you wouldn't be surprised to see people doing the extended handshake of a drug deal on the sidewalk. In the clip, she wore pink lipstick and eyeshadow, as if she could attract more attention to the case by being brightly made up. A white blouse that was too small, stretching at the buttons between her breasts.
"I just ask you to please call the police if you know anything about my girls," she said, her voice shaking. "And if you got them, just drop them off where they can make a phone call and you can go about your business."
She paused and looked down. An older woman behind her put her hand on her shoulder. The mother looked back up with tears spilling down her face, trailing lines of gray mascara, and said,
"Bailey has asthma and needs her sprays."
Cap hit pause and closed his laptop. If I am not looking at it, it does not exist. After a moment, he opened the laptop again, this time typing Alice Vega, California into Google. A ton of hits, news items from 3 years ago popped up.
the Sacramento Bee in California, 11-year-old Ethan Moreno of Modesto was found alive 3 weeks after he had been abducted, chained to a sink in a West Halsey home. Central California-based bounty hunter Alice Vega discovered the boy and apprehended one of his captors, 27-year-old Quincy Ray Day. Vega stands to collect the $100,000 reward from the FBI, as well as an undisclosed sum from Moreno's family. He skimmed through other articles. How she found a teenage girl who'd run away from her rich parents to marry her boyfriend in Reno. A few more. Just the mention of her name. She'd been brought in to assist police representing private clients in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Chicago, New York. Not a kid she couldn't find. Cap smiled, filled with an unnameable excitement. He couldn't place the feeling, except he remembered once walking with his mother in Greenwich Village when she'd dropped her keys, and a short, dark-haired man picked them up and handed them to her. She thanked him, and he nodded, kept on his way, and she stopped and faced Cap and said, suddenly breathless,
"Was that Al Pacino? Did you see him, Maxie? Was that him? I think that was him."
Nell got into the car with four backpacks and duffel bags and threw them into the back seat. "Hey, Dad," she said, stretching across to kiss him on the cheek. Cap could feel sweat underneath her lip and heat coming off her forehead. He had an urge to take a deep breath. It reminded him of when she was little and would come out of the tub smelling like a wet cat. "Good practice," he said, pulling out of the lot. She shrugged.
"Okay. Just drills and, like, one or two new plays, but we need more if we're up against Valley."
"You say Steve's knows what he's doing."
"I think so. He doesn't want anyone's opinion, though, you know. And he's only, like, 5 years older than us."
"Boys in their 20s like to think they're grown-ups," said Cap.
Nell said, "Huh." Then began to text.
"So, they still haven't found those girls," he said, tentative, watching her from the side.
She stopped texting. "I know. It's awful. They can't find the dad, either. He ran out on them when they were babies. So my question is, why would he want them now?" She was engaged, gesturing as she spoke, holding her hands out to an invisible crowd. Cap felt guilty. The kid didn't think he wanted to talk about it, so she hadn't said anything since he had turned off the TV on Saturday. But she'd been doing the due diligence in her head. It was like when Cap was working a case he couldn't shake off the brain. You find yourself awake at 3 a.m. Was it because you had to pee? Or because your subconscious was giving you clues? And why would he take them from a Kmart parking lot? How would he know they were going to be there? Was he tailing them?
"These are all valid questions," said Cap.
"I don't like the dad for this," she said definitively. "Doesn't add up."
"Who do you like, then?"
"I don't know," she said, exasperated. "I don't have any real details. Just the news, and you know how they mess it all up." Cap nodded. They were quiet.
"I watched an interview with the mom," he said.
"Was it the one where she said the younger one needs her asthma medication?" "Wasn't that awful?" said Nell. Then, quietly, she repeated, "Awful." He watched her as she picked at the skin around a fingernail.
"So," said Cap, trying to sound casual, "I met with this woman today. She's working on the case."
"What do you mean?" said Nell in her interrogation voice. Cap coughed into his fist.
"A woman came to see me who's working the case. She's been hired by family."
"The private investigator from California?" said Nell.
"Yeah. How'd you know that?"
"It was on TV, Dad. What'd she say? Why'd she want to meet with you?"
"She asked for my help. She wants me to call in a favor."
"What?" Nell started, but Cap cut her off.
"She wants me to call in a favor with M."
"How does she know M?"
"She doesn't know M. She figured that I had a favor coming to me, and she wants me to call it in so I can get the witness statements."
"Why doesn't she get them from the department?"
"You think Junior would give an inch here?"
He stopped at a red light,
feeling an old wave of frustration and gripping the wheel.
Asshole, said Nell, stewing. Did you call him?
No, said Cap. No, I didn't call him. I'm not calling him. I'm not getting involved in this. And watch your language, please.
What? Said Nell, turning in her seat to face him. Why not?
It's a police investigation, and I have my own cases to work.
As he said it, he heard the words differently. It was always like this with Nell. He'd already justified a thing in his head, but when he said it aloud, it got stripped down. There was the paltry sheath of it removed. All that was left was the truth.
Because it's embarrassing?
Because you're embarrassed? Said Nell.
My God, she would make a good cop, thought Cap. Or a journalist. Her questions just naturally sounded like someone who didn't want to demean you or pressure you. She just wanted to know all the facts.
You couldn't teach a thing like that, he thought.
Embarrassed, yes. And I couldn't put M in that position.
Dad, you covered for M because he had little kids and a wife and a mother in a nursing home. You'd barely be asking for anything in return now.
He could lose his job.
So what? Said Nell.
So what? Cap repeated. That's a lot. That's everything to most people.
You gave it up for him.
Cap felt a stab of guilt. Nell didn't have to say it. No one did. But still, it was the theme that threaded through his family's life. That after he took the fall for M, his marriage splintered and finally crashed. And even though he and Jules paid for it, and kept paying, no one felt it worse than Nell. He coughed and said,
And so the end game is that both me and M are out of a job? What's the positive spin on that?
You could help find the girls, Dad. Something you could do could help find them. The little one has asthma, for fuck's sake.
Now her voice was raised, so Cap raised his.
Watch your mouth.
They stopped at a light. Nell looked out her window and breathed strongly through her nose. That was another thing she'd done since she was a little kid, only when she got angry. Jules and Cap used to call her Baby Bull.
There's another piece to this, said Cap, calm again. I don't know who this woman is, the one from California. I read some articles about her, but she could have no idea what she's doing. Then I'd be taking a huge risk for something that has no legs to begin with.
Don't we explore all avenues? Said Nell.
Cap laughed.
I'm serious, she said. Don't we look at every angle, every branch of the tree?
Yeah, we do, Cap conceded, feeling beaten down.
They pulled up in front of Carrie's house. Nell reached in the back seat for her bags. She faced straight ahead, thinking.
Look, she finally said. Remember when you quit your job and you explained it to me?
Cap nodded.
Yeah?
You said every day we make a million little choices, and we should try to make the right ones as much as we can. And you said rarely in life do the big choices present themselves, so when they do, we have to take advantage of the opportunity. We have to do the right thing.
Cap had no response to his daughter. He felt approximately 6 inches tall.
Jesus, is there anything I say you don't memorize? He said, his voice hoarse.
Nope, she said cheerily.
She kissed him on the cheek and got out of the car.
See you Wednesday, she said.
Yep, Wednesday.
I love you, Dad, she said, leaning through the window.
Love you too, he said.
Then she was gone, up Carrie's steps. Cap watched her go inside and then took out his phone. He looked through his deleted items for Alice Vega's message. He sat in his car for a few long minutes. Cap came back home. He parked in the driveway and rolled up the windows. It was still light outside, sun setting later and later these days, but it still felt like winter to him, especially in the evenings, the air cold and glassy with the sun sinking, everything in blues and grays.
He saw the copy of Othello tucked behind the rear windshield and smiled. As he walked up the path to his front door, he didn't exactly hear something, but sensed it, a movement close by. If he were a rabbit, his ear would have twitched. He turned around quickly. Alice Vega was standing across the street. She waved to him and crossed. He couldn't help smiling and went toward her. They met in the middle of the street.
"Hey! Hi, I just left you a message," he said.
"Oh, yeah?" she said. "I haven't looked at my phone." Then he began to notice things. Strands of hair frayed and out of place. Accelerated breathing. Light sweat on her forehead. She'd been in a rush recently. Adrenaline.
"Everything okay?" he said.
"Yes," she said, sounding so sure he felt stupid for asking. "Could you help me get something out of my car?"
"Yeah, sure," he said,
but she'd already turned around and started walking away before he got the words out. She walked fast, and Cap hurried to catch up. Something was off. Something was not fitting. He suddenly wished he had the SIG on him, which was not a wish he made often.
"Hey,"
he said, and he placed his hand on her shoulder. The muscle pulsed there, a braided rope under his fingers. She shook him off, and they both stopped and faced each other. Cap held his hands up.
"Sorry," he said. "Are you sure everything's okay?"
This time she paused, appeared to think about it. "I am. Could you come, please?" She headed toward a generic beige sedan, and Cap thought how it wasn't that cold out. Why should his eyes be blurring? Why did it look like Vega's car was bouncing slightly up and down? But then he heard it, the squeak and scrape of the tires. The car was bouncing.
"What?"
he said. But Vega was already ahead of him, holding up her keys. Beep, beep. The lock clicked, and Cap caught up. She opened the trunk, and there was Brandon Haas, wrists and ankles tied with bungee cords, a collar of blue and bloody skin around his neck, urine stains on the crotch of his jeans, and a green apple wedged into his mouth. Frantic, angry raccoon eyes. He thrashed his body back and forth against the walls of the trunk and made long, muffled snorts. Cap lifted his hand to his mouth.
"This your skip?" said Vega.
"Yeah,"
said Cap. Cap reached down and pulled the apple out. Haas gasped and started screaming.
"You crazy fucking bitch! I'm gonna kill you! I'm gonna fuck you up so bad!"
Haas then realized Cap was there as well and screamed at him,
"She burned my cock! My cock is burning!"
"Did you do that?"
asked Cap.
"I did," said Vega.
"I'm gonna sue the shit out of you, bitch! I'm gonna fucking rip your face off and beat the shit out of you and get your ass thrown in jail!"
She took the apple back from Cap and shoved it back into Haas's mouth. "He'll just keep going like that," said Vega.
"So how long do you need to take care of this? Couple of hours?"
Cap shrugged, a little stunned, said,
"Probably."
"Help me get him out," she said.
Before Cap could agree, she threaded her arms underneath Haas's armpits and started to lift him. Haas wriggled and flapped his elbows around. Cap grabbed his ankles. Haas tried to kick him.
"Hey,"
said Vega to Haas, gripping his face in her hand like he was a dog she was trying to housebreak.
"Stop it!"
Haas paused briefly and then kept trying to buck. His t-shirt hiked up, exposing his stomach, white and sagging. Vega dropped him from a few inches above the street, and he landed on his shoulder blades with his head craning up. Cap dropped the legs, and Haas rolled back and forth.
"What does your voicemail say?" Vega asked Cap.
Cap was out of breath.
"Just that I wanted to have a conversation."
"I'll be back in a couple of hours," she said, "for a conversation."
She looked down at Haas like he was a traffic cone, then back to Cap. The very small trace of flirtation from earlier had gone. That had not been the real woman, Cap realized. This was her now, and she was working, and that's all there was.